This is the I Read Comic Books podcast. I'm your host, Mike Rappin. Before we get the show started this week, I want to give a shout out to the band that does all of the theme music for this show, Infinity Shred. They will be doing a show on August 17th in Brooklyn, New York at the Union Pool. If you live in New York and you want to buy tickets, you can go to Ticketfly.com and you can use the promo code LONGDISTANCE, all one word, to get $5 off your ticket. That's the promo code LONGDISTANCE at Ticketfly.com. We'll post a link to the show in the show notes. So, now that that's said, let's actually get this show started. I have two amazing human beings with me this week, Brian Murray.
Hello.
And Kate Scotchless.
Hello.
Thank you both for joining me. As always, this is going to be a fantastic episode, and I'm going to keep saying amazing and fantastic over and over throughout this show, just to give you a heads up. So, I've got one question for you to get things started. How was your week, and how were comic books for you?
This has been a good week for me. Not to make it too much about me, but I did get engaged on Tuesday. So,
woo! Congrats!
Woo-hoo! That's pretty exciting. Thank you. I'm glad I can share that with the world or our 40 listeners, whatever we're reaching.
250 listeners, okay?
There's literally Mike, dozens defensive. Of us. Yeah. No, but that's exciting. As far as comics, the only thing that could rival my engagement was the release of Predator versus Judge Dredd versus Aliens number one.
She doesn't listen to this, right?
Oh, she does. She'll hear this on Wednesday. It's fine. But she'll get it. She knows who I am. But it's exactly my kind of like goofy, dumb crossover book. I'm a pretty big fan of anything Aliens or anything Predator.
Mm-hmm.
And throwing Judge Dredd into the mix just gives it a little more weirdness, another weird place to go.
Just another dystopian future to tie into all mm-hmm. of this.
Yeah. So, I mean, I won't get too much into it, but it's basically a Predator ship lands in the Judge Dredd world, and the Predator that was inside is promptly killed by mutant hillbillies. They discover some alien DNA and promptly clone it.
Right.
And
so like then, you do.
Like you do. Yeah. So the Predators have sent in people to avenge their fallen comrade, and Judge Dredd is there because of other things. And it's, man, it's going to be a wild ride. I'm really excited about it. Beyond that, I've been reading Green Lanterns, the Rebirth Green Lanterns series.
Really?
Yeah, I always kind of liked the Green Lantern character, but we don't actually have the classic Green Lantern in this. This is Simon Baz as the Green Lantern, as well as, oh gosh, I can't remember her name. Jessica something is another Green Lantern. And Hal Jordan basically like put the two of them in their get-along shirt and then flew off into space to do other things.
Okay.
So it's I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to keep reading it. I'm three issues deep, and I haven't put it on my pull list yet, so I'm starting to think that I'm probably not that into it.
Gotcha.
I tried the Rebirth issue of it, and I have not finished it yet, and it's not very long. But I got a few pages, and I was like, I don't have a clue what's going on, because I haven't read Green Lantern like at all. So
yeah.
I was so lost and didn't care enough to look up stuff, you know? Like, it wasn't mm-hmm. engaging enough to do that. So I'm like, no, okay, there's other titles out there I can get. So
yeah, definitely. And beyond that, I kind of had the same experience with Unbeatable Squirrel Girl this week, actually.
Really?
Where I read it, and I don't know if I'm going to keep reading this book. I just, the last couple of issues have been about Mole Man trying to date Squirrel Girl. And
that seems really weird.
Yeah, and like, I'm totally on board with everything they're saying in the comic of, like, Squirrel Girl being like, hey, don't hold people hostage so I'll date you. That's dumb and you're bad.
Right.
I'm but glad like, you agree with that.
Yeah, like, I'm totally on board with what they're saying, but it has not been a very fun comic book. And the whole reason
that
I read
point,
Squirrel
yeah.
Girl... Yeah, but the whole reason that I'm reading Squirrel Girl is because it was always, like, my fun... popcorn
right.
comic
like,
book.
Like, why else would you read Squirrel Girl? Yeah.
So while I approve the message, I hope that they're done telling it, but we'll see. I mean, I'll probably keep reading it for a few issues more just to see where it goes, but
mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's weird. I never thought I'd feel that way about Squirrel Girl, and it's kind of messing with me.
Squirrel Girl is popular enough that my library gets it, so I've been reading it in trade via the library.
Nice.
Yeah, I tried issue one of this, and that book is just not my bag. I decided.
That's totally fair. It's definitely not for everyone.
It's a very specific type of humor that if it's not your cup of tea, then it's just not. It's like when people say they don't like Monty Python, and I'm like, well, I mean, if you don't like that type of humor, then of course you don't. Like, there's no...
Right.
You either do or you don't, so... Well, this week I got a lot of reading done because I was dog sitting over the weekend, and so I took my tablet with me and got a bunch of digital books read.
Nice.
So Civil War II, number 4, had the resolution to number 3 that I was looking for, so that's good. Like, the outcome I wanted to happen happened, so that was exciting.
I haven't gotten to that yet.
See how I'm telling you these things without spoiling anything? Because I love you. Aww. Listeners, you're welcome.
Ain't you the best, folks?
Well, especially after number 3, I haven't read any of Civil War 2, and a coworker of mine was like, Mike, just read this one issue. You don't need to know too much. Just read this issue. And I read it from cover to cover, and I was like, oh, jeez. I, like, reconsidered. Mm-hmm. This is just like Secret Wars, you guys. I'm reconsidering potentially reading this, but don't let Nick know, even though he'll probably know when he hears this episode. I don't know. We'll see.
So I've been really enjoying it, and Team Stark all the way, guys. Let's do this.
Same.
And I also read Mockingbird number 5, which finished out that first arc. And this is another book that it's like, it's fun. And if it's not your type of fun humor, then I absolutely get the beef with it, where it's like too topical, too internet-y, meme-y stuff.
Absolutely.
But I feel like not all comic books need to be made to last for ages. I think this book is very specifically for the moment, and it's entertaining in the moment, and it's not making you think. It's like this fun palate cleanser, like pick me up. And I think that's great. And I think there's room for everything. You know what I mean? Yeah, I think I'd be really upset if all comic books turned into this kind of thing, but for the few that we have, it can be fun. So I really like that first arc, and I'm going to keep going with it. Black Widow number 5 is like the absolute opposite, where it's all super dark and serious and stuff goes south and it's all action and it's awesome. And so one of my main beef with Capes is that you get a bunch of action that actually isn't actually telling anything. It's just like 10 pages of a fight scene Like, that's where I dropped off with Mighty Thor. So, like, it's literally just people smashing stuff with hammers. I get it. She has a hammer. It's cool.
Yeah.
Okay. And so I get that some people really like that, but that's not for me. Whereas Black Widow, the action is actually story-driving and story-driven, which I love. And this is the way, in my very humble opinion, it should be done. So
Have you been following Mighty Thor the last couple issues?
I dropped off after first arc.
Okay. She's currently fighting an evil super dominatrix who kidnapped a minotaur.
Oh, you had me at evil super. Yeah, I don't know. That's another one that I think I'm going to look for the trades once they come out eventually at the library. Because my library's been getting that one too. They've actually been really good at my local library about getting some more of these female titles and putting them in the kind of young adult girl area. Be like, hey, look at these awesome ladies doing awesome stuff. I read Batman number 2 and had discussions with Nick about this because Gotham Girl's outfit bugs me so badly. But we kind of came to the conclusion that we trust Tom King to not hurt us like this. And so really, it's a statement on how ridiculous and awful Silver Age stuff was for women, because her skirt is like a napkin. It's like the schoolgirl pleated skirt, but it's like maybe 3 inches long, and she's flying around in it. And I'm just like, no.
But that's more on David Finch, isn't it? I mean,
oh yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't trust Finch, comics, right? And Nick is like, no, don't worry about Finch, because Tom King is probably using it to then prove that these people from the past are like kind of ridiculous, and that he's calling an adult woman girl and all that stuff like that. Like, it's So maybe it'll turn out as commentary instead of just straight up sexist crap. But
Yeah.
I'm holding my breath. So,
but until it's proven to not be sexist crap,
we must assume it's not just Finch, then, yeah, exactly. And then my big thing was I read Sex Criminals Volume 3, which was super disappointing.
Oh, no.
Oh, man. Yeah, okay, hold on. We're about to fight right now.
What? Okay. You were super into it. So I didn't think it was bad. It was still good. It just wasn't, like, I didn't love it the way I loved the first two. And it felt very much like Fraction was just getting bored with the series. Like, there's very little story progression. Most of the stuff that's in there, like, the joke stuff is mostly for shock value stuff that doesn't really lead anywhere. And then there's, like, these really weird moments, but not in the quirky fun way of the first two volumes. They're just, like... And then it gets really preachy via text instead of story. And, like, I agree with what they're saying, but can't you give us that in the story instead of literally a lecture? Like, they literally have a character that's giving a lecture to a class, and so it's just panel after panel of this, you know, lecture. Yeah. It's like, wow, that is not the most creative way to get your point across. And, like, I agree with your point. That's not the problem. It's just that it just got... So it wasn't as fun for me as the first two volumes. And I thought the best joke of the whole thing wasn't even part of the story. It's in one of these meta panels where they're drawing themselves. And Chip jokes that my Coke habit is 100% funded by a duck comic. And I'm like... as a point of saying, like who cares about anything? The world is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, there's definitely fun parts. And I liked it, but I'm not... Like, one and two, I'm like, oh, those are amazing and I love them. And this one wasn't quite up there. How about you, Mike? What did you read?
Well, okay. Let me just.
Like how I segued there, so I couldn't get your argument. Moving on.
So I think, okay, there's two parts to this, right? One, Matt Fraction as a writer, I think, is leaning more towards he is starting to progress or become more of a writer who wants to send a message in his books more than just tell a good, solid story. Mm-hmm. And I think that can work for some people where you're trying to get a point across to people. And especially with something like Sex Criminals, where they're very open and they're trying to, like, they're trying to get their readers to understand that sex isn't this black and white binary thing, you know? And so a lot of the stuff that they started to touch on throughout this third arc, I think, was trying to open the eyes of the reader to say, like, things aren't as simple as you may think, and that's okay. I don't think that he's trying to, like, put anybody off, but he's trying to fit that message within the story. And yes, it gets a little long-winded in this arc, but I think it's important.
It's not even in the story. It's like a whole separate just dialogue. Like, so the first two are very message-heavy too, but they do it within the framework of the story, within the characters. You know what I mean? I mean, it's definitely a very liberal, sex-positive kind of comic with great, like, a bunch of underlying messages. But then this one, it's like, you know what? What if we basically strip the story, just leave in the talking part of the message?
Messages that they were trying to convey in this book, though, they didn't want to leave any room for ambiguity. So by telling you straight, they say, this is it. This is the fact that we're trying to present to you, rather than masking it in like goofy humor where you could say, oh, were they being serious about that? So I don't know. That's the second part is, I think that this book is losing a little bit of steam. That's all. But I mean, I'm hoping that volume 4 picks it back up, because maybe this is just an off arc to get the message across. In the next arc, things will be back to being goofy.
It could be.
Penis-y.
I think part of it is that a lot of this, the popularity and fun of this book was the initial, like, shock value of the really funny concept. Yeah. And now that that's worn off, they are kind of struggling to come up with something more. And that's where you get these kind of really weird moments in this book where it's like they're trying to find that new shock value crazy thing. But it's just kind of having trouble hitting its stride.
Could be. I think we'll see with the next arc. We'll see. I have faith in this book. Blind faith in this book, despite my my grievances of the weird meta commentary in some cases. But ultimately, I go full head in on this book. Like, I'm ready to just take whatever they have. Unlike, you know, other books where I'm like constantly being the cynic.
You got to stop saying things like that when you're talking about Sex Criminals. Going head in and taking all they have. Like,
our one true leader and lord, Matt Fraction.
Anyways, well, See, let me think. So the stuff that I read this week, I managed to get through all of my digital regular pull backlog, which is insane. I read everything that I've been pulling that's just kind of been sitting. I have a few physical books that I need to finish, but otherwise, I managed to get through a lot. But the few that I want to talk about here really quick are Flash number 3, the clunkiness that I was worried about last week, totally cleared itself up in this most recent issue, and I really like the way that the story is being developed with this new supervillain, which is very, very exciting to me, even though I know nothing about the Flash. Getting a new supervillain is always fun. Wolf number 9, weird story, but the backup comic at the end of this book broke my heart in so many ways that I like had to stop reading comic books for the night because I was just so torn up over the little 5 or 6 page story that was added. And it's not part of the Wolf series. It was an independent creator, an independent writer that Alice Cott, he plucked out of wherever. I don't know. He said, I like these people's stuff, so I'm going to put them in the back of my book. And he's been doing this for this entire arc. But this specific story just like wrecked me. I don't know what it was. I like almost like started crying just because of how sad the story was. And that's like really rare with comics to be so involved in a story like that. But I, in these 5 or 6 pages, it just like the preface that the creator gave, just ruined me. It was a crazy night when I was reading that book. So if you want something that's gonna absolutely break your heart, just read the last 6 pages of Wolf. It was unbelievable.
That's when you need some squirrel girl in your life to make everything all better.
So, no, that's the thing, though. I was in the middle of like reading my like a list of books, and the next book that I had was All New Wolverine after that. And I was like, oh, this is going to be fun. But I finished Wolf, and I like had to take 10 minutes like to not read anything and just like digest what I just read before I could get into the next book, because the next thing just seems so stupid and pointless in comparison. Right. Like,
Sometimes you just need to digest and process.
Yeah. I haven't had that happen in a comic in a very long time, so it just totally wrecked me. So I wanted to bring that up. Like, kudos to those creators. I'll put a link to the book in the show notes. Like, it's a very important, good story that you should read. I also read Outcast number 19. The story in this book is getting better and better every single issue. I have to credit Kirkman for developing the slowest story in the world and still have it be very good after 19 issues. That's all I can say about that without spoiling anything.
He is kind of the slow build king.
Yeah, I think he's really figured out the formula with this. And Outcast is great. If you haven't seen the show, you should go watch the show. Like, this is a killer series. I don't think as many people are looking at it, or maybe I'm just not seeing the right news articles that are promoting it, but I don't know if a lot of people are reading this book, so I hope that a lot of people are.
No, I haven't seen or read anything about that or the show. Like,
it's definitely worth checking out the first trade or something.
Okay.
Just to get into it. It's really dark. The art is beautiful. Like, some top-notch art in this series. The colors are fantastic. Elizabeth Breitweiser, thank you so much. And, yeah, this book is great. But finally, the thing that I really got into this past week was Superior Foes of Spider-Man, which is a book that came out a few years ago, and I never picked it up, but when Marvel did the big buy one, get one free on Comixology, I bought the whole series, and this is the most fun, enjoyable Marvel book that I've read in a long time, in the sense that, like, if you know just a little bit about Spider-Man, this book is so worth it. Like, if you just know that he kind of has this rogues gallery of ridiculous villains, and you know that the Marvel Universe is kind of filled with these B and C and D level supervillains,
yeah.
Like, this book is great. If you get a chance just to grab the first trade is what I pretty much just finished, and it's hilarious from beginning to end. The main character is Boomerang, and he leads a team of what they're calling the Sinister Six, but they're actually only 5 people, and they're all, like, dimwits, and Boomerang is the most selfish, ridiculous person in the entire story, and it's fantastic. But I love this book. I'm digging it, and I'm sad that it's only 17 issues, but from what I understand, it ends on a very good closing note, so, you know, you gotta appreciate that at least. But, you know, let's move on to what we're excited for this upcoming week. Comic books come out on August 3rd. So let's cut right back to Brian. What are you excited for this upcoming week?
So the one that I'm most looking forward to is Deadpool versus Gambit number 3.
Yeah.
This is a series that absolutely would not stand up as an ongoing, but for like a 5-issue miniseries, I think it's going to be fantastic.
Man, I agree.
I read the first 2 issues in one sitting last weekend, I think, and it's just, it's wacky and fun. It doesn't have any kind of impact. It's not going to change the world of comic books.
Right, right.
Even in-universe, I doubt that there's going to be any reference to any of this stuff ever.
Yeah, yeah.
But, again, I think that's why it works. Because, as, you know, anything with Deadpool in it, you basically have to ignore it in the main continuity, or else everything falls apart.
Right, right.
But one thing that I really like is it's got Ben Acker and Ben Blacker on it, who mm-hmm. are, they work on Thrilling Adventure Hour, the podcast.
Oh.
Which, if you've never listened to that, it's great. It's not as good as this podcast.
Of course.
But it's got a real, like, hour-long radio show feel to it. But they're both people that I didn't actually realize were on this book until I was getting ready for this episode.
Oh.
Because I'm woefully bad at looking at who actually creates the comics I like. That's a huge problem for me, actually. But I happen to be looking it up so I could actually give credit where it's due for once and realize these two were on it.
Mm-hmm.
As well as, and I'm probably going to butcher this name, Danilo Bayreuth, I believe it's pronounced, who is on the pencils.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just a, it's a good, clean-looking book. The art doesn't stand out, necessarily, but it's super easy to look at. I think that it captures everything it's trying to do really well. And so while, you know, it's not the kind of book that I would take frames out of and hang up on my wall, I think that it does an excellent job of conveying what the comic is trying to do.
Totally. Yeah, I picked this book up off of Tia's reference, because which I was very surprised by. Like, I can't believe
you were all over this. It's got Gambit in it.
That's the thing. Like, I was like, oh, it's got Gambit, but I was like, oh, but it's Deadpool. I can't. I really am just against these Deadpool v whoever crossovers for some reason. But I saw the cover, and Tia was like, this is really good. You got to read the first issue. And I was like, okay, screw it. And now I'm hooked in the same way. Like, it just does this story really well out of continuity as far as anything else is concerned. So I'm glad that you picked it up too, Brian. Now you understand the love for Gambit, right? You're right on board. You're going to buy all of his comics and stuff.
I mean, sure. We'll say yes.
I appreciate that lie. Kate, what are you excited for this week?
There's a couple things I'm looking forward to, but I'm most excited about Animosity number one, the new series by Marguerite Bennett and artists, and I'm going to butcher this one too, Raphael de la Torre, maybe is how we say that last name. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
It's from Aftershock, the publisher's Aftershock, and the preview pages haven't actually shown us much about the story, and I haven't read much other than this same blurb over and over, so I'm just going to read that, if that's okay.
Yeah, go for it.
The premise is that one day the animals woke up, they started thinking, they start talking, they started taking revenge. Now a dog and his girl are trying to get away out of New York City and all the way to San Francisco to the only person who might be able to protect and save her. It's a new kind of road trip, a new kind of black comedy, and a new kind of coming of age. So...
Huh.
The art panels are pretty. They're the kind of clean and colorful panels that I like in books. And at least what we've seen so far on the preview sites, right? And then you give me black comedy and dystopia and animals. Okay, I'm on board. I'm on board. And I do like Marguerite Bennett, so.
Oh, Mike, what was that? What was the one about the animals and the mech suits?
Oh, We Three, and it's heartbreaking.
Oh, so sad.
Yeah.
That's all I could think about when I saw this on our document.
Yeah, same here.
All I could think of was that episode of Family Guy where the dog gets... No?
I don't watch Family Guy, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. It might not be Family Guy either. I could have my adult cartoons mixed up. But anyway.
Are you thinking of Rick and Morty where the dog gains sentience?
That's the one.
Yes.
That's the one.
When you said Family Guy, it was like, she's definitely thinking of Rick and Morty, but I'll see how this plays out.
See, I don't watch any of these like regularly. I watch them like when you go to a friend's house and like, this is what you have to see. So that was the one.
It's good timing. I just watched all of Rick and Morty this weekend.
Oh, nice. Yeah, you know, it's really funny that you brought up this comic only because I think I've seen a lot of people are doing work for what is this?
Aftershock
Comics. And they're getting pretty, as far as I'm concerned, pretty big names to do books. If I'm not mistaken, Warren Ellis is doing a book through them. Joe Kelly's doing a book through them. Margaret Bennett, this is her second book through them. So, like, I don't know what they're doing to attract this talent, but kudos to them. I mean, they're very new, interesting, gritty stories that just seem to try to... They're trying to do, like, a mix between Image and, like, Avatar Comics in a way where it's, like, kind of horror-y, but kind of, like... I know, I guess edgy in a way and funny in some cases. So, like, I don't know. I didn't read any of Insects, but from what I saw, it was all like body horror, sexy stuff. So,
you lost me at gritty and edgy. Those are two like red flag words for me going into anything.
I understand that. Yeah. But I mean, nonetheless, you can't turn your nose up at the fact that, you know, Aftershock is pulling these people in. So they must be doing something right. It's kind of like, I feel like they're almost like a black mask in a way where they're coming, they're bringing up this talent with really, really good content that people are seriously starting to like. So it'll be good. It'd be interesting to see how this book turns out. So Kate, you'll definitely have to follow up.
Yeah. I mean, this will maybe be my first from this publisher. So we'll see.
Cool.
How about you, Mike?
This week I'm just going to plug a book that I think I've plugged every month since it's come out, and it's Moon Knight number 5. This is Jeff Lemire, Greg Smallwood, Jordi Belair. I don't think I need to sell it to you anymore. The cover for this book is one of the coolest covers I've seen in a long time, where it looks like Moon Knight is ripping off a human face, and underneath is the Moon Knight mask, and that's a very, very good metaphor for what's actually happening in the story, so I have to credit Greg Smallwood for that cover.
Yeah, but no spoilers.
No spoilers.
I'm behind you, and this series is amazing, so no spoilers.
I really don't want to say anything about the story because it's too much to explain. If I wanted to give you what happened last time, I might as well just tell you what happened in the last four issues, because it's wild and crazy, and it's playing mind games on you and playing mind games on the characters, so this book is incredible. If you're not reading this, please.
So amazing.
Yeah, Greg Smallwood's art. Oh my goodness. Speaking of him, there was the big Dark Horse sale during SDCC on Comixology because I buy all of my discounted comic books from them. And I bought Dream Thief, which is Greg Smallwood's first book. And if you think his art in Moon Knight is good, you should definitely check that book out because it is top notch. That guy's consistency since his debut on that book has been absolutely phenomenal. Like, he has always put 110% into his work, and every single issue of every book that I've seen him on has been like that. So gotta credit that guy's pencils. He is fantastic. Pencils and inks, I believe. For this week's episode, I wanted to talk about something that I don't think we've actually brought up on the show before, and that is superhero team-up issues. Now, when I say superhero team-ups, I'm not really talking about crossover events like Civil War or Final Crisis or anything like that, but I'm actually talking about when you're reading a comic book like All New Wolverine, for instance, and Squirrel Girl drops in, and they do an entire issue where those two characters work together for a common goal. So this doesn't really include books where you have a famous supervillain drop into a book against a character that normally wouldn't have them as an arch nemesis or something, but mostly when we've got two characters that come in that are from different books or different titles and they work together to solve a thing. And this can be one issue, this can be multiple issues. So, you know, we as a group here, Brian, Kate, and I, we came up with a couple different examples and things like that, but let's actually talk about that. What makes these types of team-ups really exciting, or what makes them really bad? So whoever wants to jump in first, go right ahead, because I think we've got a lot to talk about here.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that the thing that always draws me to these kinds of team-ups and crossovers and whatnot is seeing a character do something that they wouldn't normally do, or interact with a character they wouldn't normally interact with.
Mm-hmm.
So the Deadpool versus Gambit book that's going on right now,
yeah,
really grabbed me because, to my knowledge, these are two characters who don't interact with each other. And Mike, you know everything Gambit has ever done, so you can probably well, correct me on that. But
I mean, I would say that they've probably talked once or twice in other books, but it's never been like a straight up Gambit and Deadpool need to hang out and solve this thing. So this book, yeah, same kind of thing. I was really curious after I was sold on it by Tia, but yeah.
Yeah, so it's just like, it's these two characters who have pretty different approaches, but are similar in enough ways that it's kind of a good, like, the opposite of a buddy cop movie. It's like a buddy, it's a buddy criminal movie.
Yeah, who's the buddy and who's the criminal? I'm not really sure, but, you know, you decide.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think I like them the best when they are used to... The interplay between the characters who don't usually interact is used to show more of their personalities that you... Sides, maybe, or aspects that you don't usually see, or bring it out in a very demonstrative way instead of the authors just kind of telling us, oh, so-and-so's like this. And you can use it to really develop the characters more. And that's, like... All New Wolverine number 7, the crossover with Squirrel Girl, is a great example of this, where there's still story development and character development, but it's fun at the same time, and it's a good break. And I think that another aspect of that is you can have a tonal break in the series where, correct me if I'm wrong here, Mike, because I'm a little rusty on the, I read the first arc, but the crossover one is a much lighter issue than the others. Like, it got kind of intense with her sister clone people. Bad stuff going down.
This issue was by far the most wacky of all of them, specifically because it starts with, as I said in a previous episode, Squirrel Girl shows up with an actual Wolverine, assuming that Wolverine is called Wolverine because she can talk to Wolverines.
Yep.
And that Wolverine has stayed in the series since that crossover. Like, that That's added awesome. To the story. And so Laura's clone sister actually keeps this Wolverine as a pet, and they get along really well. I mean, I feel like I've harped on, like, being a sucker for these kinds of things, but it is so perfectly gimmicky. And I mean, I think I'm really biased because I love, you know, Laura, and I love this all new Wolverine story, but it's worked really, really well. Like, the introduction of this little side character has worked out perfectly, and it was all because of a team up issue, you know.
Right, and that's the so what things that bug me with team-up issues is when they have no impact on the story or character development moving forward. It's just like a side thing, and then you feel like you didn't really get your issue for the month, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which sometimes happens, or where it just feels really, really forced, which happens
point.
Sometimes.
Yeah, it's totally possible for a character to cross over into your book and then completely take over your book for as long
right,
as they're there.
That too, yeah. Hijacking
so,
it.
So suddenly you're not reading All New Wolverine, you're reading the issue of Squirrel Girl that
suddenly
Wolverine
you're like,
is
but
in.
This is a Captain Marvel book. Go away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, she is the new Wolverine.
That's true.
As far as appearing in every single
in
book.
Everything,
goes.
Yeah.
Really? Wait. Are you saying Captain Marvel is that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really? Hold on. I think I'm like too far out of the, like, mass appeal comic books at Marvel to, like, know what you guys are talking about here.
She drops into so many titles right now.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I'm reading three books right now where she is a central figure in all of them.
Well, is I've that because the, of Civil War?
Civil
War
is
so.
Part of it.
I think they were kind of trying to build her up as more of a figurehead character than she has been in the past.
Yeah. I mean, I'm reading the Captain Marvel solo series, and then I'm reading A-Force, where she is the leader of A-Force, mm-hmm. and then I'm reading Civil War II, where she is Tony Stark's nemesis, and it's just not... These are all books that exist in the same universe, and in theory exist in the same timeline, but they're all occurring at different points in time, is I think what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I just read the latest issue of A-Force over the weekend, and they just mentioned, like, going into Civil War II. So
interesting.
Like,
yeah,
so even
she drops
I've
into
read...
Miss Marvel, too.
Oh, does she?
Yeah. I don't know about recently, because that's another one that I read in trade, so I'm not completely up to date, but yeah.
Right. But some of these kind of make sense. I mean, you know,
oh, they totally
Captain Marvel
do.
Is the nemesis, and she's the leader of A-Force, but to that point, she has Wolverine syndrome, like you said, where she's in everything, and how can they all be happening at the same time when they take place in probably other different parts of the country, or mm-hmm. all
yeah.
over the place, you know, or in space, for instance, you know?
Yeah, and so I mean, like in A-Force, She-Hulk, is a main character. She's part of A-Force. But if you've been reading Civil War II,
she's out for the count.
That
yeah.
something happens to her very early on. She's gotcha. Incapacitated almost immediately at the start of Civil War II.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So that can be, you know, the bad side of these types of things where you've got a character that drops in, I guess, and they take over a book. And I'm sure that we could probably pull another 10 or 20, you know, examples of this. I'm sure anytime Batman drops into another DC book, it's like, all right, now this is a Batman story. And yep. whatever was happening in the book probably isn't so important. I can't really speak to that too much because I don't read a lot of books at DC. But my guess is when Batman shows up, it's Batman's story. And the same with Superman.
My issue with DC is when we have Wonder Woman show up to be the love interest triangle kind of female hero. It's like, oh no, we both love Wonder Woman. What are we going to do? Let's fight about it.
Yeah, because this is like 1955,
that doesn't just happen with Wonder
right?
Woman. That happens with other female characters too. But
it's like, obviously, we all love Wonder Woman, but right? that doesn't need to be the story.
And we both love Jean Grey. It's okay. We can be friends.
See, well, that's my whole, like, that's not really crossovers or team-ups or anything.
That's
just X-Men
books. No, but
it's
the same kind of thing. That trope of the female, especially the female hero that then, oh no, she's gone crazy and can't control herself. So we need to bring in other characters to save her and from herself and the world from her kind of thing, which you get with a lot of the X-Men characters, because for whatever reason, all the female X-Men, not all of them, but a ton of them have brain powers, right? So it's like, uh-oh, Storm's lost control. Uh-oh, Jean Grey's lost control. Uh-oh, Scarlet Witch has lost control. Do we have maybe a fear in ourselves about women losing control of themselves? Oh, dear.
Well, it's the hysteria thing, right? It's that old...
Exactly, and that whole thing is one of the... I'm like, nope, this is not a good storyline.
See, okay, and to that point, I think Marvel has tried to distance themselves from that. Like, I think the primary problem in Civil War II is there's a kid who can see into the future. At least that's what All New Wolverine told me. And it's a guy. I think one of the
Ulysses.
Big universe-ending things that almost happened in the X-Men right before they rebooted for Secret Wars was there was this mutant who was all-powerful, could alter reality, like, at the molecular level, and it was a guy. And it was another, you know, play on these things. So I think Marvel's been trying.
Yeah, no, they have definitely. But, of the, well, I'm sorry, DC half the time, it's like, are you even trying to change? Come on. But yeah, Marvel's gotten a lot better with this stuff and giving us more strong females that are not just a strong female. You know what I mean? Like Wonder Woman syndrome.
Strong female character.
Wonder Woman is literally just strong. That is what she. And then so they've given us much rounder characters that actually have flaws and make mistakes and come through it on their own without being saved. And they've done much better recently.
Yeah.
But we could spend a whole episode talking about that, I'm sure.
Yeah, I was going to say, back to team-ups, right? You know, when we think of team-ups,
we just have a lot of feelings, okay?
I'll put my soapbox back in the closet. Fine.
I understand. You know, I let Nick get away with this all the time. I should not stop either of you. but you know, I'm thinking, you know, for me, I a lot of the times, you know, the Avengers will show up in the X-Men sometimes because each of the X-Men all have, like, you know, a past with some Avenger. Specifically,
right.
Beast usually has a friend in the Avengers. And Beast is kind of always that neutral character who's just like, oh, don't worry, I'll call, you know, Tony Stark, or I'll call, you know, Reed Richards, and we'll figure things out.
He's with the Inhumans now, too, isn't he?
I don't know.
It's like a self-hating mutant.
I don't know if that's true. Don't be talking about my boy
franchises.
Beast. But I mean, Beast has always kind of been that character who has jumped around. I mean, he was in the Avengers for a while.
Literally, he jumps around.
Get out of here! Podcast is done.
Have a good week, everybody.
But even, you know, another example is, you know, and we're primarily talking here about Marvel, so I'm sorry for all the DC fans out there who are probably like, what about this? But I'm thinking, you know, Bobby Drake and Spider-Man had a regular crossover / team up, or I think they had a book together in the 70s or 80s where it was just them having adventures in New York and solving crimes. And I would call that a team up book, even though the book was called like Spider-Man and Bobby Drake or Spider-Man and Iceman or something like that. But when they get together, it's like two buddies hanging out and they're also being superheroes. And it's fun. It's like a lot of really, It's not the normal, like, X-Men, we're being persecuted, or Spider-Man, my world is awful. It's like,
they're both,
we're just cool, like, cool dudes.
Yeah, they're pretty upbeat characters.
Yeah. And I think that's really nice to see when, you know, we're looking, especially in modern comics, where, like, everything's either super 100% serious or, like, wacky, insane, Howard the Duck crazy. It's like, I think that team-ups like this offer a happy medium, or, like you said, a palate cleanser for books that can be more serious when you just need a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, and I think, too, sometimes a team-up book or crossover can breathe fresh life into storylines that have gotten pretty stale and tired.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not thinking of great examples, unfortunately. I don't read a ton of Capes, so I have not read very many crossover team-ups, period, because they don't really happen when you read, you know, many Image books and stuff. So
right, right. Unless you're reading Invincible, and they did that whole big, you know, Invincible Wars thing, but that's different. Anyways.
I think of
that. Is that still a superhero thing, though?
Kind of, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. See, I mean, once you get out of the cape genre, I feel like this is really just part of that. Someone correct me, because there's probably something out there that proves me wrong, but...
No, I think, like, in the same vein of what you're saying, we've got, like, these books, these crossovers can introduce you to and make you care about a character that you weren't familiar with before.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. Which is, well, totally.
And give them more story points when they've run out of stuff with their character, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, from a marketing standpoint, the obvious reason to do them is to get people to buy both lines. And, you know, now I like Spider-Man, so I'm going to buy that too.
But we're talking about content here. We're not talking about the manipulation of our brains through content that we care about.
But that's one of the things I like about this Predator versus Judge Dredd versus Aliens comic that I picked up.
It's so ridiculous.
Yes.
Yeah, it's absurd, and I love it.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't care about Judge Dredd. Like, I didn't like the original movie. I liked the remake okay, but not enough that I would ever go out and pick up a Judge Dredd comic book on its own.
Yeah.
But you throw in Alien and Predator, and suddenly it's like setting off the monster movie part of my brain. And I can't resist anymore.
Yeah.
And it's also giving a fresh story for Alien and Predator.
Yeah, exactly. Because
it's not just like, okay, well, there's a derelict
same
spaceship.
Old, old.
Let's go on there and mess with these eggs. Oh, no, monsters. Like,
again.
Love you to death, Alien movies, but come
now,
on.
Now I have it in my head. I'm thinking of, like, all these cool Image crossovers we could have. Like, what if we got Ginny from Pretty Deadly and paired up with a Lion Cat, and they're going through the Wild West? That'd be awesome!
So, my brain hurts trying to think of logistics that would bring those two books together.
Don't think about it. Don't think about it. Just love it. Just
what does
Lion
Cat do other than be a meme? I don't read Saga. So.
Oh, he can just tell when you're lying. That's his thing. Or her thing.
He's
don't remember.
Slinky and cool.
Yeah, but you know, there are books that I think, you know, kind of like Predator, Judge Dredd, Aliens that gets crossed over. You know, we have that Lumberjanes and Gotham Academy thing that's happening right now. I think that's ongoing, or maybe it's a mini series, but that's I think it was a perfect example.
I thought they both just kind of combined the one art, and so it's technically part of an ongoing, I think, but it's not its own thing.
Gotcha. Okay. But even still, that's a crossover that I would have never paired together, but, you know, it establishes, you know, a little bit of universe, it adds really diverse characters, and putting them all together in a story that I'm sure is going to be full of fantastic mystery and adventure, which both of those books do already.
Right.
So, you know, positive.
That's like the Reese's Peanut Butter Cup of DC Comics right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Two great tastes that taste great together.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Well said, sir. Well said. They're going to use that now. Like, that was good. Can we put this on the book?
I hope so. DC, I'm available.
You're going to pick up the trade and be like, hey, look.
Right. So, you know, these can be beneficial then, right? So, like, I think to Kate's point, the idea of you saying, oh, well, I like this character, now I care about them because they were in this book, or Brian said that, I don't remember who said that. You guys are just two voices.
We're interchangeable in Mike's head.
Yeah.
We look so
very
much
similar
alike,
voices.
So.
It's sometimes hard to tell us apart.
Yeah, you guys are like voice twins. But, you know, there's also a bad side to this, right? Like when a team up shows up for no reason, like we kind of mentioned, and specifically, I think we get these weird crossovers or team ups where like they characters show up for no reason and then they fight each other. And, oh like, they're God. Either both good guys or, like, you know, I kind of mentioned that a villain shows up. But when it's a primary character, like, when if Punisher was hunting down, you know, Captain America for whatever reason, which to me is, like, that's the most ridiculous thing I could ever think of. But, you know, if that were to happen, you'd kind of just be like, aren't these guys, like, weirdly not matched? Or, in the specific case, Batman versus Superman.
That was just what I was thinking.
I was trying to find another example other than those two.
There was a terrible movie about this recently.
Yeah. Oh, well, okay. It wasn't terrible. There were some things we can talk about here. It's a whole different thing. They did some things right. The story was bad, but they did some things really well. Anyways.
The something was the 5 minutes of Wonder Woman.
No.
That was right. That was good.
She was great.
I liked the way they dressed up the Joker in a Lex Luthor suit. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. But back to the topic. You know, Batman versus Superman in comics never seems to make sense, or when we've got heroes that are fighting that seem to be strictly for, like, pride reasons. There's no good reason for them to be fighting each other. And
pride
yet,
reasons yeah, they, or a female. Sometimes right, they throw in the right. female to be the
yeah,
conflict.
Or a love interest. Yeah. That's totally true.
And the other 8 times out of 10, it's because of a misunderstanding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I thought you were the bad guy. No, I thought you were the bad guy. Well, let's team up and beat on the real bad guy now.
Right.
It's a fine storyline to do once, but when Marvel and DC and whoever mm-hmm. else are all using it all the time, it gets real boring.
Like, yeah.
You did it. Good job.
So, but I mean, outside of that little, I feel like that's like one small piece to the bad side. Is there anything else that really doesn't, like,
sometimes
like the team-ups don't work?
Sometimes you end up with writers, a writer for a team-up book that is not good at writing, is used to writing one of the characters and not the other, or isn't used to either, and then they don't come off as themselves. So sometimes, I mean, for the same reason some comic books don't work, I think some crossover runs kind of fall into the same thing, where if they're not, you have to be able to write both characters well so that you feel like they're, you know what I'm not sure I'm articulating myself very well here. Do you know what
this,
I'm getting at?
This absolutely makes sense. I think when you get a character that drops into a book and the writer just doesn't have a grasp on
the character, and especially the way they speak and stuff, suddenly you get Spider-Man talking exactly the same way as Tony Stark, and you're like, wait a minute.
Like, they're both smart, but Spider-Man is trying to make bad jokes throughout his explanation.
Right. So I think that kind of thing can be tricky, but that's true for any team-up book. I mean, how many Bendis books do we have where like 90% of the characters all have the exact same speaking style? So
Yeah. But you know, it's funny though, because I think a lot of writers at Marvel want to drop characters into their books sometimes because they have a really good voice or grasp on mm-hmm. that character. So when Spider-Man drops into an issue of Daredevil, I'm certain that Charles Soule will definitely be able to write that character really well, and it'll be hilarious. And you'll go, why isn't he writing Spider-Man? And you go, because he writes a better Daredevil. Spider-Man was just a little extra cherry on top of your sundae.
Exactly.
But that's always been really interesting when you see a character, or you see a writer just totally get a character for a team up, and you go, why aren't they writing this book regularly? It kind of like boggles your mind a little bit.
Or an artist, a guest artist on him, sometimes will have the same effect where you're like, but this is so perfect. I want it all the time.
Right.
I love the friendship between Daredevil and Spider-Man too.
Oh yeah.
Like those two just as like bros broing around is such a good time. Like they touch on that in they make a joke about that in Deadpool versus Gambit.
Oh yeah,
where Deadpool and Gambit dress up as Daredevil and Spider-Man to commit crimes.
And it's
just like a joke at the end where like Daredevil and Spider-Man get back and they're talking about like, wait, they're saying we were antiquing when this happened.
Yeah, like they were out just hanging out as Peter Parker
and Matt Murdock. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I think that joke, that whole joke in that issue, was what sold me on number one. So I gotta credit those guys, because what a ridiculous premise. But you know,
at first I thought it was just like Daredevil or Deadpool was telling the story, and so we were just getting like a weird twisted version of what actually happened, because Deadpool is an unreliable narrator.
Right.
But no, that was good.
Yeah. I'm in. So I think like one other piece to this might actually be the when a supervillain from another character's book shows up in a character's book, right? So if Spider-Man started fighting, you know, an Iron Man villain, that's like a crazy team up. In some ways, like Iron Man will show up in that Spider-Man book to help, you know, quell the fight, but ultimately it's always weird when somebody stumbles upon it, and it's usually turned into a big joke where it's like, oh, I wouldn't normally fight this guy, they're out of my league, or the other way around, where normally I wouldn't fight this guy, they're way under my league, and yet here I am taking them out because of some reason or other. And I know that's kind of the opposite of what I talked about, but that usually ends up either developing the villain more, or it ends up developing the character that will eventually show up to team up in that book, right?
Right.
Yeah, and I think that depends a lot on the skill of the writer. And on what characters they pick to put into which situations. Because, obviously, if you pit Superman versus the Penguin, like, that's a stupid joke issue.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
if you do, like Iron Man versus the Green Goblin or something, you have two characters where, you know, Norman Osborn is almost like the dark reflection of Tony Stark.
Totally.
And so you can get some really cool interactions out of putting those two characters together. Assuming, like you were saying earlier, Kate, that the writer has a good grasp on both characters.
Right. Yeah. And can build a story around it well. Because if you can't also build the narrative well, it feels so mashed together. Like, very forced. And I think that's one of the really tricky parts about it, too. And when you see it and it doesn't feel forced, like, that's when you know you have a really good writer.
Yeah. And that's pretty much the worst part. I think we touched on it a little bit already. Is just that... that idea of a crossover or a team up simply to like add padding to the story that has no real ramifications. It doesn't really add to the story. And it ultimately just feels like we could have not had that issue, and it should have been like an annual that isn't important to the story, which is what annuals have always been for. I think they've been able, they're like free areas to kind of tell an off the beat story. And yeah, I don't know. It's always bothersome. I mean, and I don't think we see that very often anymore. Usually everything is heavily plot driven, especially in the big two, where you get these one-off issues and they're like, no, there has to be serious ramifications, otherwise why are we doing this? So we have to at least credit the, you know, big two for trying to add everything together. So, good on you, I guess. Mm-hmm. That's one thing against the 99 other things we aren't really a fan of. Cuz we can attack these monolithic, you know, establishments without any ramifications, because, you know, whatever. But
except that if you keep making fun of Marvel, I'm not going to be your friend anymore. But
yeah, I'm a self-hating Marvel fan, you know.
Yeah,
but otherwise, I don't know. The X-Men get crossed over into everything, because I didn't want to get onto that. Like, big, I could have gotten onto a big soapbox, but like everything crosses over with the X-Men, especially Avengers versus X-Men, which is a whole thing that where it was just a series of crossovers, and they even did a book where it was just X-Men versus Avenger. That was the whole book. It was like 4 issues long, and each issue had 3 different heroes or 3 different X-Men fighting 3 different Avengers. Like, that was the whole point. It was like your Street Fighter of comic books for 4 issues.
Why would anyone want that?
No, it's sold. It's sold. Like, people wanted that. Because
and that's
why
you
always
have X-Men
and
everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, then, because there's a million X-Men.
Yeah,
that too.
Yeah,
like, but they seem to always pick the same X-Men to cross over into stuff, though.
Oh, like, totally.
Yeah, who's going to show up? Always... It's going to be Wolverine, Storm, yada, you know, it's...
Yeah, maybe Gambit or Nightcrawler, if you're lucky.
Yeah, Iceman, probably. But nowadays, I think, like, we've also got, like... There are 2 guys who are on the Uncanny... I mean, there's that whole Uncanny Avengers book, which is, you know, X-Men and Avengers, but I think now it's more Inhumans than anyone. I don't know. I shouldn't speak to this because I'm not reading any of these books. I don't follow it. But I've seen covers where Rogue and Gambit are making out, and I was so tempted to buy the book because I'm like, oh, more love story between these two? Which is the
Mike's
last
OTP
thing my wallet
right
needs.
There.
Seriously, I am like a sucker for this stuff. But I you know, I haven't bought it. I didn't buy it. So I have to pat myself on the back. Instead, I filled the void with like 3 other comics that I didn't need. So... I don't know.
Well, and the Inhumans is a whole other thing where they're getting shoehorned into absolutely everything.
Yeah.
Because Marvel wants us to stop caring about mutants so that, you know, eventually they can get the X-Men back, is I'm sure what it's all about.
Yeah. For a lot less money,
Or something.
Flesh out the franchise we own.
Right. But, you know, that's the way things are going to go. I don't know. You know, we just have to deal with it, I guess. I mean, and we can't be too mad about it, though, right? Because Miss Marvel is an Inhuman, and that's like a character who is fully fleshed out, super well-developed, in a series that is very, like, all-ages-friendly, not just kid-friendly, but all-ages-friendly. And it's probably one of Marvel's better books.
Yeah, so, no, it's amazing.
As much as we want to call the, you know, the Inhumans thing a shoehorn, it has worked out, and we've gotten good books out of it in some ways.
Yeah.
Yeah,
plus Civil War II, right? You guys are all excited about Civil War II, so...
Yeah, but I don't actually care about the Inhumans.
Oh, right, okay.
There's
right.
that problem. I'm in the same boat. Like, you know which team I don't care about in all this? Yeah. I've tried to read some Inhumans. What was the one that came out, started a few months ago? I think it was Uncanny Inhumans or something. I tried like the first two issues and I was like, yeah, no, sorry.
Was that the one that started off with like white suit Galactus or whatever? Like,
I don't know.
I watched a YouTube video about like Uncanny something or other. I don't know. There's a great YouTube series I like to follow that's just Comics Explained. It's this guy. Okay. Just does like 15-20 minute videos digging into an aspect of comic books.
Oh, so he's trying to take our jobs from us. I see. That's great. What a guy. Jeez.
His is much
what
more
you're describing
like
is called the competition.
Yeah.
But it's great because I can listen to him talk about, you know, Deadpool kills the Marvel Universe and save myself the time of actually going out and buying and reading that book.
Right.
Perfect.
Which I don't understand those types of books. You know, like the Deadpool versus... I mean, we got the Deadpool versus Gambit, which apparently I love and all this stuff now.
Because it's not actually a versus book.
Yeah, so far. Okay, that's true. But
it's
we also
team up. But
we all had the Merc with the Mouth book. We had the Night of the Living Deadpool 1 and 2 or something, Return of the Living Deadpool or something. And, I mean, I still don't understand the appeal of those books. And if anybody out there who's listening does, I would really love to hear what you like about those because... I tried one of them, and I just couldn't get into it. It was way too wacky.
Well,
and
he's wacky, crazy, cool, man.
Yeah, and see,
no,
I think that's what it is.
You.
I'm just not that
just
kind
know.
Of reader. I don't really want that kind of craziness in my comic books sometimes, or at least my Kate books. I don't know. And this is why comics are like super gritty, because of people like me who are like, well, I don't want it to be fun. I want it to be, you know, death and destruction.
I like funny when it's actually funny.
But
so there's that.
But then it's like a different sense of humor, and we're getting to like this meta like understanding of like what is actually funny to people and how do we create this mass appeal. We have this character that people seem to universally love, so let's just throw him in everything and try to make it fun and crazy because that's the character now.
And then you get oversaturated with that character, and then you start hating everything that they're in.
Right. Which is why Wolverine died, but now he's back as Old Man Logan, and he shows up in everything, including both of my X books. Yep.
No, he's in Extraordinary X-Men, right?
Yeah. And he's in All-New Wolverine. He's not an Uncanny X-Men, but I'm actually waiting for him to show up.
He'll be there.
He's lurking
in
a corner.
I think he was in X-Men Civil War 2, because that's
maybe.
Its own little miniseries.
Yeah. Well, you know, Wolverine's dead, except for he's not Wolverine. It's the new Wolverine, who's from another universe, who still knows all of the future of the current universe, but I don't know.
I can actually hear your blood pressure going up about it.
I'm sorry that this show gets so bitter sometimes. I just hate comic books. It's a real problem.
Whenever people start talking about this, all I can think of is that song, you know, Guess Who's Back? Back again.
Logan's back.
The seminal
Stab
masterpiece, The Real Slim Shady.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, speaking of themes, Kate definitely posted a SoundCloud link to this Squirrel Girl Wolverine Spider-Man theme song that
oh
I will
gosh.
Be posting in the show notes, and it's adorable because can't get over that crossover.
Yeah.
The writer's son did it. It's cute.
Yeah, it's pretty fantastic. But I think, you know, team-ups, ultimately, let me put a nice little button on this. Team-ups, you know, they're good and bad, like most things in life, but ultimately, I think, on the whole, team-ups can be good or usually are good, especially nowadays where we have writers trying to drive the story by adding these team-ups, by adding more flavor to a book, to set a character more in a universe. Even if we don't want hardcore continuity in some ways, we do want them to still at least exist side-by-side in some way. Mm-hmm. You know, these characters can't be completely independent, especially when they're dealing with world-ending events on their own, and it's like, how come the Avengers didn't show up? You know, it's that age-old question of, if the X-Men are destroying the universe, how come the Avengers didn't show up? Or how come the Fantastic Four didn't show up? Isn't this their domain? So when we get these team-ups, we get that little bit of hint that, yes, these events are aware, or these other characters are aware of the events that are happening, and it creates a nice, not strong held continuity, but it creates a loose continuity to at least say they know of the existence of these other characters. So
I feel like DC has that so much worse than Marvel does with Superman. Because, I mean, everything that happens in the DC universe, it's like, why isn't Superman here doing this?
Right.
Like, why doesn't Superman just swoop in, grab the Joker, and like, lock him up at the Fortress of Solitude or something? Like,
yeah. I think, you know, it's funny you say that, because there was actually a story all about that, that J. Michael Straczynski wrote before the New 52.
Really?
And it was a constant, it starts with Superman being interviewed at this press release, and this woman gets on his case, and she says, you know, my husband was dying, and you could have saved him. Why didn't you do that? You were off, you know, saving, you know, another planet, or you were off doing something that wasn't as nearly time sensitive or whatever, and you could have saved this one person. How come you didn't do that? And so the whole arc, if I'm not mistaken, is all about that, about why Superman can't be everywhere at once. And it makes, supposedly, it like does a pretty good job, but I haven't read the whole story, so I've read some reviews that say that it's pretty good. So if you're interested in that side of the story, that's out there somewhere. J. Michael Straczynski started at like issue 700 of Superman, I think, or maybe Action Comics, one of the two. So they're not all bad, and you're stupid for not knowing everything. So,
yep, showed me.
And that's why Mike's our leader.
That's why Mike is alpha nerd on this podcast.
That's right. He busts out the, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's going to be my title card now for this show, is Mike Rappin, a.k.a. actually.
Mike, actually Rappin.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to the I Read Comic Books podcast. Our host and producer is Mike Actually Rappin, and the show is edited by Xander Riggs. Special thanks this week to Kate Scotchless and Brian Murray. The music in this episode is brought to you by The Four Owls and Infinity Shred. You can find more of The Four Owls on Bandcamp at thefourowls.bandcamp.com. You can find more of Infinity Shred at infinityshred.com. And remember, if you're in the New York area on August 17th, you can see Infinity Shred live at Union Pool. Tickets are on sale now on Ticketfly.com. Just search for Infinity Shred. And our listeners can get $5 off the ticket price by using the code LONGDISTANCE. That's one word. If you enjoy this show, tell someone about it. Rate us online. Write to us. Tell us what your favorite superhero team-ups are by writing to us at ircb@destroythesybe.org. You can find the entire podcast team on Twitter, and you can follow the show at ircbpodcast. You can still join and spark conversations and ask us questions over on our subreddit at ireadcomicbooks.reddit.com. Until next time, from all of us here at the podcast, thank you for listening.
I really gotta get on that library thing. Because, like,
You're in Michigan, right?
Yeah.
Michigan, you can use Melcat for anything your library doesn't have. So, and that obviously doesn't work well for titles that, like, no library really has.
Yeah.
Like, good luck getting any Image comic that isn't super popular. But for any of the mainline DC and Marvel stuff, yeah. Well, like, they're like Saga and Walking Dead and some of the other... And I'm totally spacing on what some of the other big ones are. But, Revival and I don't remember. But anyway, yeah. Sex Criminals I just read from the library, the volume 3 that I talked about.
That's surprising. That's surprising. Well, things
that are popular enough. They put it in the adult section. Which, with the other, like, Grant Morrison Batman and stuff like that. So,
right.
Listen, kids, go back to your section. And still you see parents that are like, it's a comic book, it's for kids, here you go. That has been how, I think because I started out reading comics in college when I had no money, that's how I started out reading comics, and then I've kind of stuck with it. And so I didn't actually start by going to a shop for, like, the first 2 years. I didn't buy anything because I didn't have any money, so.
Yeah. now I've transitioned into being an adult with no money. And it's
exactly. Well, I have a little bit, and then it disappears because I buy comics. But
yep,
I'm really good at budgeting in the shop. It's that 2 a.m. when your PayPal's linked to your Comixology account, and you're like, oh,
you haven't merged your account.
One. What? My Amazon thing?
Yeah.
It's all merged. That's how I end up, like, I'm really fiscally responsible in the shop, and then at 2 a.m. on Comixology when I can't sleep, I'm like, oh, I should catch up on Miss Marvel.
The comic book booty call.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Exactly. I'm like, I'm going to wait for this when it comes to the library, but then it's like, oh, but I'm bored right now. It'll be fine.
This is how we make our money. Good.
Exactly.
Good. A text from Marvel Comics at 2:38 in the morning and just says, you up?
Exactly.
Oh, man. Okay.